Good evening. I'm Ashley Kistler, director of the gallery, and I want to welcome you here tonight and thank you for braving this bad weather to join us. The gallery is really grateful to WRIR for being a co-sponsor of this program and exhibition, and I'd like to thank especially Alyssa Solomon for her promotional help with this project. And I also have to say that since WRIR came into existence, Richmond is even a better place to live. We're, of course, very happy to have Simone Allen back, and I'm sure he's looking forward to the day when he doesn't have to step into this building each and every day. But thank you so much for Simone for being here tonight. And he's joined by David Noyes and Bill Lupoletti, DJs extraordinaire from WRIR. And we're very happy to have with us Daryl Harper as the moderator of tonight's program. And I just wanted to give him a quick introduction. And these highlights are just a few of the many that could be included in this introduction. Daryl has performed as a clarinetist in venues throughout the world. His credits include opening concerts for Max Roach, the Billy Taylor Trio, and the Wynton Marsalis Quartet, as well as dates with Freddie Bryant, Orrin Evans, Tim Warfield, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Carla Cook, Roscoe Mitchell, Dave Holland, Uri Kane, and a two-year touring stint with violinist Regina Carter. As a composer, Daryl has published and recorded more than two dozen works, including a film score and commissions for choreographers. In the late 1990s, he began his career as a bandleader with the formation of the Onus Quartet, Quintet, and the subsequent Onus Trio. These ensembles have performed at venues throughout the country, appeared on television, and recorded four albums on the Hypnotic Records label. His current projects as a leader include the clarinet piano duo Into Something and the C3 Project, a multimedia presentation of music, video, dance, and poetry. Daryl holds music degrees from Amherst College, Rutgers University, and New England Conservatory. Since arriving at VCU several years ago, he has taught courses in jazz studies, improvisation, and music history, and just last month he was appointed interim chair of the music department here at VCU. Please welcome Daryl Harper.
Thank you so much. Well, let's get started right away. Bill Lupoletti is WRIR's world music director and host of Global Agogo.
That's me.
David Noyes is host of WRIR's Ambiance Congo and co-host of the Motherland Influence. And Simone Allen is the featured artist for Imaging South Africa surrounding us today. I'd like to start by asking you all about your motivations for collecting African music. And I've talked with some of you already about this idea of curating, which struck me as strange as a musician because it's not a word that we normally use that we associate it with collecting music, but it certainly is appropriate. Can you tell us, maybe starting with David, when and how did you get started collecting?
It's kind of a long story. I got disinterested in what I was hearing on the radio at a certain point in my life, and I started listening to Latin jazz and New Yorican music, things like that, and branched out into Haitian music. And then I heard a record by Tabu Ley. I can still hear the song. It's my favorite song. And on a street, there was a number of record stores in Washington, D.C. Back in the early 70s. where you could buy African records. They were like little boutiques. And I was walking by one day, and here was this incredible sound coming out of these little speakers sitting on the sidewalk. And I had to know what it was. And it sort of was, I kind of lost interest in everything else after that.
How about Bill?
Well, I got interested in African music in the early 1980s, which was about when it started to get actually reasonably accessible in America. You could find records like in record stores, and I would go down to Plan 9 Records in Carytown and buy almost anything that they had in the international bin that was from Africa. And so that was where I first heard Fela Kuti or King Sunny Ade from Nigeria. King Sunny came and played here in Richmond. I think that was 1982 or 3. Were you here then?
I was here then, but I didn't go.
And so that was a pretty major event. And South African music in particular, South Africa was very interesting politically at that time, and I was reading about it and read Joseph Lelieveld's book, and that got me very interested in the culture and music of South Africa. As far as curating, that really has to do with being a radio DJ, which I've started doing when I was in college, and I've never thought of myself as a collector of anything, but I guess I am, because that's why I'm sitting here, right? And so as a collector, my real focus is on things that can get played on the radio. And two hats that I wear on that. I do a radio show, and I'm also the music director for WRIR, who's responsible for getting all the world music that we have in our collection. And so that's what I focus on, is things that either I want to play or I think other people are going to want to play on the radio.
Simone, at your gallery talk, what was that, 2 weeks ago now? Let me get a sense of, from the audience. Was anyone here at the gallery talk? Okay, a lot of people. Okay, so at your gallery talk, you one of the things you spoke about was the project that's behind us, the Mkapa project, and you told us about the importance of the visual presentation to you, and then even these things that were really unexpected for me, like the hidden messages behind what we can see here, the liner notes being different for various editions of the same album or various pressings and that kind of thing. The kind of political messages that you're interested in the music. How did you get interested in collecting? Because you're coming at it from a different angle than these two folks.
Thank you. I've always had an interest in music just generally, and I, from I guess a really young age, collected records and stuff like that. But a number of projects that I've been working on the last couple of years, and this gallery is filled with many of them, have dealt with this idea of imaging South Africa. And I suppose I came to the record project, if I can call it that, from those projects. And the first project being the stamp piece that's upstairs, and then moving into the newspapers, and then finally into the records. I think going back to what you were talking about earlier, the record project itself for me started when I found this Mkapa Belafonte record at Diversity Thrift for $2, and I bought it, what I was struck by was the political content in the liner notes, and I think from there I became very interested in trying to put together this sort of archive of I guess political content, if you like, and this is where this project comes. So in a way, I think I'm maybe more focused on stuff around the music than the music itself, though I am interested in the music.
That's interesting to me. I wonder maybe with Bill, what are you thinking, what are your thoughts about political content and your role as music director or doing a show on WRIR, which is a very specific kind of station that positions itself politically with a certain kind of posture and so forth. How would you relate what you do to what Simone just talked about?
Yeah, David and I were both at WRIR before it was on the air, so both of us are kind of involved in the creation of it. And, you know, so I consider myself to be something of a media activist for wanting to take the time, put in the effort to help start a radio station from scratch. And, I view everything that I do in terms of broadcasting as being a political act, you know. And sometimes it's pretty overt in the material that I play or what I say. And sometimes it's completely opaque to most people. So to me personally, I find it really important. When I got into African music, one of the things I've gotten out of it over the years is I've developed a much better appreciation for this notion that they call in academics now post-colonialism. You know, it's the idea that culturally the world is a lot flatter place than we had previously imagined. That there are all of these things going on in all of these different places at once, and they're all kind of basically on the same plane. And when you look at it, when you start listening to music from other people's cultures and other people's languages, and struggle with trying to understand it and interpret it for yourself in your own way, you realize, hey, you know, my culture is just the same to those people. It's just as unclear to them as theirs is to me. And you know, so in that sense, I think the whole project, the whole process, is really political. Yeah.
How about you, Dean?
Well, politics never really crossed my mind. To be perfectly honest, I like the music. Most of the music I listen to is in languages that I don't speak. You'll find that's actually true, particularly with the Lingala music that I play on Ambiance Congo. It's extremely popular all over Africa. I have many African friends who have no idea what the lyrics are about any more than I do. And yet they're as addicted to the music as I have, many of whom have grown up with it. Their fathers bought records by Franco and the OK Jazz and Tabule and the old school like that. And their fathers didn't speak Lingala, but it was always in their homes. And the politics really never crossed my mind. I know back when I first started branching out and buying other African records besides Congolese records, one of the first things I bought was South African music, because that was... there was the whole thing with apartheid was going on, and then, what's that guy's name? Paul Simon put out that record that was so popular, which I can't remember the name of.
Graceland,
yes. And I was impressed by the rhythms that I heard in it, but I wasn't impressed by the record. And I wanted to find out where this music came from. It was much more interesting to me than Paul Simon's record. Nothing wrong with it. It's a good record. But when I started listening to what was available in this country, which was pretty limited to like Malatini, Mahotella Queens, people like that, I was impressed with it. But yet I always strayed back to, I have a lot of Ghanaian music. I have a lot of Malian music. But I always strayed back to Congolese music. When I'm buying new releases, that's where I put my money, because I just love the music. And again, politics doesn't really have a lot to do with it for me. It's I just like the music. The reason I do the program is because I heard it one time and it struck me, and I want to share the joy, share the love.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just wanted to add something to what you were saying in terms of Paul Simon's Graceland. The album itself is actually pretty controversial in South African history, I guess, because at the time Paul Simon actually broke a cultural boycott that was on that was established against performing with South African musicians. And he got a lot of flack for that. And what I think is kind of interesting, I'm going to get to Howard can expect your point in a minute. What is interesting about there's a whole body of discussion around whether this was a good thing or a bad thing, and I think what's kind of interesting is one school of thought talks about the fact that the record allowed for other musicians from South Africa to be heard, and the case in point, you arriving at this music through that sort of doorway. And so in a way, I guess, to be fair, sure, Paul Simon did exploit the musicians, but on another level, something else was created. And so I think the album, it could be viewed in many lights. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that album actually opened a market. Yeah. In this country, it was something that, you know, it was played on the radio. I mean, how often do you hear true African music played on the radio in the United States other than on WRIR?
Yeah, as long as we're all reminiscing about Graceland, I can tell you that I avoided listening to it for several years after it came out because of the boycott. You know, I was opposed to him doing that, and also because I was kind of a snob. I thought, you know, hey, I already know about South African music. I don't need to find out about it from some, you know, guy from Queens. I'm from Queens, you know. So, but you know, I was a lot younger then. Now I really like it. It's a record that that I think has a tremendous number of virtues, and I really love the way that it's a synthesis of what he does and what he did before that record, and the South African music that inspired him. So I think it's really outstanding.
David, can you tell us a little bit about your method of collecting? So you have these various things you've mentioned that you're attracted to. How do you go about getting them and keep putting them in your collection?
Well, it's very hard to get the music that I listen to. You can't. Well, now that there's no more record stores, I used to buy things at Plan 9. I used to be able to go to Plan 9 and get, you know, Congolese records. Well, and after that, then you went to Tower, and Tower's gone. And there was a when I first started buying records, there was a wonderful guy by the name of John Storm Roberts who had a barn up in Tivoli, New York, which is up near where Bard University is, Bard College is, and I got to meet him once. I went up there, my daughter went to school there on scholarship, so I got to go up there and hang out with him. It was great before he closed up shop. And I used to buy lots of things from him. He had this wonderful catalog that you could subscribe to, and he'd mail it to you free once every couple of months. And I would open it with trembling hands and say, "Oh, what's in here?" You know, and there'd be all these gems in here that he had found and would make available to you on cassette or LP. This was before CDs. And I would spend, as my wife knows, every penny that I had that we weren't spending on food, on LPs. And now I have actually people sending me records. Do you want these? I don't want them. You're playing them on the radio. Do you want these? That happens. I have friends in Europe who say, this is the newest record. You've got to hear it. And since you're doing a radio show, here's, you know, here it is. Don't sell it to anybody. Just use it for public access. And I buy new CDs. It's very difficult to do because you can't get them in this country. You have to know about them. I find out about them through various English language forums about African music on the internet. And then I go and seek them. There's websites mostly in France and Belgium where you can buy them.
Simone, will you tell us a little bit about the scramble for vinyl article that you shared with me the other day? Give us the context for it, and then what was...
Okay. I guess because I sent out the link to this article, I should probably say why. I sent, well, there was this this article written called The Scramble for Africa by, I guess, a young DJ based in New York. And he was sort of likening, I guess, I think what he was referring to, he was talking about a number of record companies that, small labels, that have been going out of their way to find obscure African music and to republish it and obviously make money from it in the West. And I think his main criticism, though, after rereading the article, was that that these companies tended to focus on certain kinds of African music, certain kinds of Afrobeat, funk, rock-inflected music, and but the article was pretty controversial on the web because he the article went with a map that wasn't actually produced by him. That was a colonial map of Africa, and instead of the British colonies or the French colonies or what have you, he had the names of major record collectors or producers and what have you, and it caused quite a big fuss on the web, and so I kind of thought, seeing we were talking about record collecting, that maybe I would send it out to everyone. But you saw. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I had read this also, and the guy who posted this reminded me of myself. You know, when in 1985 when Graceland came out. I don't think he appreciates. He was talking about the world in a colonial format. I think it's outdated. You know, I think he's 25 years or 50 years too late with what he's saying. Interesting thing about the folks that are doing this collecting, the digging. They're finding items that have long since been forgotten or ignored by most all people. Mostly, they're finding them on vinyl because the master tapes of these recordings are dust. You know, at this point. And they're finding the best vinyl they can get. They are seeking out the artists to get background information, to get photographs, to get documents from the period. They are fully licensing the material. This is the case of labels. If you see these in shops or wherever you buy music, Soundway, Analog Africa, Strut, labels like that. They are licensing the material. They're finding the actual artists, making sure that they're getting paid royalties on the reissues. I got to tell you, from what I know about the African music world, they're doing a lot more for the artists than the labels that put out the original records ever did for them. So, so that's why I think, you know, colonialism is a pretty outdated concept when you're talking about that in music. There have actually been bands. And I guess the first one that experienced this was the great Orchestra Baobab from Senegal. They actually were more or less defunct as a band. They reunited because their material had been reissued in the West by a guy named Nick Gold from World Circuit Records in the UK. And the band reunited, started recording again, mostly songs that they had written in the 1970s, went on tour. They've toured now several times in the USA. None of this would have happened without Nick Gold, you know. So anyway, I mean, that's my critique of the article.
Actually, can you hold on to it, Bill? I have another question. Can you talk about your collecting methods and how you get hold of things for...
I'm a freeloader because of the great opportunity of working on this radio station. Lots of folks in the world music world, and I work on stuff from all over the world, not just Africa. So lots of folks who are putting out recordings, either of new material or of reissues, have found our radio station because we play this kind of stuff. And as you know, most radio stations are pretty pointless today. So they're very excited that there's actually an outlet for the music that they're commercially releasing. And so they're very eager to send stuff to us and have us play it. And I'm the guy who deals with all of those relationships for the station. And so I get tons of stuff sent to me. It's fantastic. You know, this is the payoff, you know, for this job that I put all of this time into and don't get paid because I'm a volunteer. But I get 5 or 10 records a week sent to me. CDs. And a lot of times now it's digital files that people send or access to downloads that are, you know, watermarked or coded. And you know, what I have to do for them in return is I have to listen to the stuff. You know, I can't just, like, get it and throw it out, right? So that's where I get a lot of things. And then after that, when it comes to things that I'm interested in or looking for, then it's a matter of sourcing the material. Like David said, it's a lot harder now than it used to be. It's not so much, you know, the reason is there's so much more material that's available to all of us than there used to be. And if you are, like, at least one person I can see in the audience who owns a record store, you can't inventory all of these things. You can't have them available. When I started listening to African music, if you had a section in your store and it had 50 items, that was a huge section. That was a lot of material. Now, I mean, you're not even scratching the surface. So what we're really experiencing is this world of the long tail, where there's more and more products available, there's more and more stuff available to all of us, and we're overwhelmed by the dissonance of everything that's out there. So everything I'm interested in, I got to figure out where I can actually find it, which in a lot of cases means, you know, I have to buy a lot of stuff from overseas because they're not being distributed in the U.S., there are fewer independent record distributors now. That's where the real problem is. It's not the stores. There's fewer independent distributors than there used to be. And, you know, the internet is a wonderful thing because I'm a subscriber to eMusic, which is a wonderful subscription-based download site that has a great amount of world music. And others do as well. So you really have to be an expert at researching and looking for things. It's like going to the library now.
Simon Allen, how about you? Your collecting methods. How'd you get hold of all of this?
Oh no, I can't talk about that. Actually, I primarily have one source, but no, I shouldn't say that. The dominant source has been eBay, and there are a number of really good sites out there, Jam and others, to buy records, but I got used to the way eBay works, and so I just I do most of my searching on eBay. But also, I also buy records on the ground, so to speak. So whenever Kendall and I go back to South Africa, and Kendall hates this, we always end up at some weird record store that's like down some weird alley somewhere, and so I get some stuff from there, but I will say this: I get more stuff on eBay though, because for whatever reason, it's a bigger marketplace. So there are so many more people in the world, you know, loading the stuff on, and you know, with search engines and what have you, and that's basically how I find the stuff. I find certain searches, keywords and stuff like that, and then I just go through, you know, 300-400 items and looking for little gems here and there, and it's been pretty useful.
While we're on that topic, can you tell us about Flat International?
Yes. the Macabre project that's behind you was the start of this sort of record archive, if you like. But in a way, I feel like I've moved beyond this, and it's important in that it was the start of what I have been doing. But what I'm working on now is basically building up an archive of South African audio. And I guess it's kind of weird to be maybe restricted by one nationality, but it's kind of, I'm South African, and so it seemed like an appropriate thing to do. But one of the things I wanted to do with the archive was to put it on the web, and so I'm building, I have built a website, and I'm slowly loading the information. Most of the information, I'm a little bit tentative to go load, you know, MP3s, because obviously there's a lot of legal issues around that. But I'm slowly starting to build this archive, and one can go to the website, it's flatinternational.org, and do a search on any South African artist, and obviously not yet, but in the future you will be able to do this, and get a discography, click on a specific record, and then view detailed images of the cover and liner notes. And the liner notes themselves are I've OCR'd them basically into the program, so you can search someone's name and it'll come up in the liner notes, etc.
Let's just say something about this.
And you just, this just went online literally this month, right?
Yeah, 5 days ago.
So I looked at it, you know, when Simone told me that it was up, and I was just like drooling. I was like, if there was something like this for all of the music that I was interested in, I would be so much better informed than I am. It's incredible. It's really worth taking a look at.
Thank you.
David, can you tell us, what are your thoughts about this, the other part of the title that of this talk that strikes me as curating African music, and you touched on this, Simone, that you are South African, you're interested in South African music, but a lot of times we kind of pursue this Pan-African concept or African diaspora concept. Where are you on that? Interested in particular regions? Are you, tell us.
Well, yeah, like I said, I'm primarily interested in Congolese music, and it's just because I like it. I can't tell you why. It's incredibly complex. It's there's some incredibly virtuoso singers, guitar players. Some of the trap drum players will blow your mind. I mean, there's Mary Jo from Zico Langa Langa. The guy's amazing. And again, like I said, I kind of lost interest when Southern rock and disco started appearing on the scene in this country. You know, Jimi Hendrix was dead, and soul was being replaced by disco, and suddenly there was like nothing on the radio that interested me at all. And then suddenly here was this music that had everything that I had been looking for in it compiled all into one. I mean, it was these a lot of the songs are very formal. The singers will come out and they'll say, look what I can do. And sometimes that'll be 5 minutes long. Look what I can do. And they're showing off. Yeah, but they're amazing singers, and they should. And then there's a mid-tempo section, and then they have this thing called the sib-in, which is the extended dance period at the end. And by the time I get finished playing a song on the radio, I'm all out of breath, because it's a good thing I'm not on TV, because I look like an idiot when I dance. But I can't help it, you know. And it's... what was the question again?
Pan-African. How about you, David, or Bill, sorry.
Yeah, you know, because I've kind of defined the thing that I'm doing as being world music, which is an industry term, it's a marketing term, really. It's a term that nobody likes, but we all use. So I guess I'm pan, you know, a lot of different things. In terms of my, you know, personal aesthetics, Afrobeat is right up at the top. I think the South African music, I think, you know, Simone and I were working yesterday together because he's going to be on my radio show on Friday. So it's a Friday from 5 to 7 on WRIR. And so we spent about 7 hours listening to, you know, a bunch of recordings. That thing over there, that scan, we listened to that record, Marching on Pretoria, it's from 1903. And I just really love South African music. And so this was fabulous for me because I got to hear 7 hours worth of stuff that I'd never heard before. So, but yeah, I'm kind of an omnivore as far as this stuff goes, and it's hard enough for me to just constrain what I play on the radio to the format that I've, you know, invented for myself. So yeah, I guess I'd go as broadly as I can.
I'd love to hear all of you comment about the format of the music and that importance to you. You've talked a little bit about looking for vinyl, things that are hard to find anywhere else. But vinyl, MP3s, does live music play a part in influencing you and inspiring you? Do any of you perform and have a relationship to the music like that? How does format, anything that you hate that you say, oh, I'll never listen to it that way?
Well, I used to feel that way about CDs. When they first came out, I am never going to buy a CD, I told my wife, and it's like, now I've got, I don't know how many of them, but it's, I just bought my first commercial MP3s the other night. I like having something in my hand. I love these album covers. I like holding the vinyl in my hand. I like putting it on the turntable. I like the way it sounds. I like looking at the liner notes, which I can't read 9 times out of 10. Actually, most of the ones I have, I can read French. I can't speak French, and I can only understand it if it's spoken at me relatively slowly. But I like to read the liner notes. I just love to have it in my hand. I mean, that album is a great thing. When they started disappearing, and there was that brief period when you could buy cassettes or CDs, I bought cassettes. Wish I hadn't. I just bought my first MP3s the other night, and Simone was saying a minute ago about dragging his wife down back alleys. I don't know how many back alleys in this country and in Europe I've dragged my wife down, going, "Oh, there's a record store here." You know, people are saying, "Oh no, that there's a white guy with a camera. Let's all run away from him." And I'm an addict. I've got a Jones for this stuff. That's about it.
I haven't seen as much live music as I'm not necessarily into performance myself, definitely not. but what I have seen, I feel very fortunate that I saw a number of South African groups when I was living in South Africa. That when I was an art student and we were just crazy and, you know, our professor would take us out to these jazz clubs and stuff like that. And I feel very fortunate now because at that time I appreciated it, but now I really appreciate that. And I was fortunate enough to see people like Philip Tabani of Malambo actually at the Rainbow Room in Pinetown, which is like just a nowhere place, but that was a fantastic experience, and a number of other performers at that time. And then here, I guess Kendall and I mean, it's much harder to see, you know, really cool stuff here. I mean, I'm not saying it's harder, but Kendall and I have been fortunate enough to see. We saw just recently up in DC, we saw Ladysmith Black Mambazo, which I know that they're really popular and you can see them in, you know, huge auditoriums, but we were lucky enough to go to this benefit that they had organized, and there was 100 people there, and it was very intimate, and that was an amazing experience. And Joseph Shabalala basically asked a bunch of people in the audience to come and dance on stage with him, and he taught them, you know, some dance steps, and I feel very fortunate to have witnessed that. I don't know if I answered your question though.
formats. I have the same exact story as David about the CDs, you know, which we colloquially referred to at the time as standing for Compact with the Devil. And I also have a lot of cassettes that need to be digitized now. And I saw that Simone has a bunch of 8-tracks. I was very impressed with that. But really...
Oh, they're just for show.
Oh, no. Because you don't have an 8-track player?
No.
You need an older car. I'm becoming more agnostic about this because my focus is on broadcasting, you know, on doing radio and getting other people to do radio. The world is moving to the download format. We're convinced at WRIR that that's what's going to happen. We think probably, you know, in the next 5 years, our CD library, which is about 7,000 discs in our studio right now, and that doesn't count all of the things that we deaccession literally every week. We're deaccessioning material now. All of that stuff is probably going to be obsolete within 5 years, we think. But, you know, it's actually been slower than everybody expected. So I'm starting to accumulate more things digitally, but, you know, I still put them on CDs for myself to play on the radio and to store. So I'm still very much a physical objects kind of guy. And I've always loved vinyl. I love it more maybe even now because I just got reading glasses for the first time and it's got the biggest type, you know. But, you know, as a DJ, working with CDs is wonderful. It's really, really, really easy, the equipment that's available to manipulate them. And when it's that easy to manipulate digital files, that's the thing that's going to flip us over. It's not that easy to do it yet. As far as live music, yeah, I love live music. And unfortunately, the kind of music that I'm most into, you know, this is a medium-sized city, and you don't see that many artists come here. You got to go to Washington. You got to go to New York. But the people that come here, you know, I'm frequently in the audience. If anybody saw this group, the Debo Band, that's an Ethiopian group. They're at Balasso, you know, with maybe the legal capacity is maybe like 80 people there. They probably had twice that. it was fantastic, and so things like that that I know about, I try to be there for those events. I was a musician, I'm a poor musician, so I'm really a lot better as a DJ. But I studied piano for about 10 years, classical. Took up playing vibraphone when I moved to Richmond. I actually played in a band with Tim Harding, who's in Hotel X. And Tim, of course, has worked at being a musician, and I haven't. some of it is me. This is like something that I can do as opposed to being a musician.
Again, talk about dragging Julie around. Every time I hear that there's going to be a concert of Congolese artists in the United States or in the East Coast in this corridor, I try to go. And 9 times out of 10, we'll find ourselves in an abandoned shoe store in some, you know, part of some small city that you wouldn't normally go into. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the band begins, and there's maybe 400 people there. And we've been waiting all night for this to begin. And the concerts, I love them. They start at, you know, the doors open at 9, and then the music starts at about midnight, and then the band shows up at about 1 a.m., and they play till dawn. And the local Congolese, the local Kenyans, the local East Africans, they show up. They don't show up till 1 o'clock in the morning. Dressed to the nines. It's a social event. It's an event, and I love these events. You go to these events, and you get to talk to the artists. You get to see them live. And again, it's the hours. I love them. I'm nocturnal anyway, but it's to get to go to these things is always a treat. And I only hear about them because, as I say, I've subscribed to these English language forums. The advertising is usually atrocious. They don't tell anybody that it's happening, and you just sort of have to be there. These fill stadiums back home, and you go there, and there's like 100 people to 200 people. And it's like, you know, you're talking about, you see these videos of these live concerts at places like Fikin in Kinshasa, which is like, there's like, you couldn't count the number of people if you stopped it and framed it. You could not count how many people are there. These places are packed. There's people hanging on the rooftops of the adjoining buildings. And you go there and there's like maybe 200-300 people. And it's like, I don't know why they come over here, to be perfectly honest, but I'm glad they do.
Yeah, Bill, something that you say is these are not obscure musicians. They're just really, really popular somewhere else, right? Yes, can you all talk to us about any advice you have for, we obviously have a lot of WRIR listeners in the audience, any advice you have for us who may want to start collecting if we're not already doing that, or if we are collecting a little bit, how we can get better at it, advice from your experience in doing so much of it.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, I've never thought of myself as a collector, and I'm really not any more a collector than you are. If you are a fan of music, you have a collection of it, and especially today, in the kind of the iPod or personal music player era. You're accumulating all of this stuff, and I think the challenge, this is the challenge that I have, and I think it's the challenge that you all have, is, like, what is this stuff? Why do I have it? What is it doing here? How am I going to listen to it? One of the great things about having a radio station to work on is that a radio station is sort of like the opposite of an iPod on shuffle. Somebody is playing it for a reason. Hopefully they're going to tell you what the reason is, or you can figure it out from what they're doing, and hopefully they put some time into what the reason is that they're playing it. That's the curation, aspect. We're all curators now. That's the thing. There's so much content, and it's flowing through all of us, And it's going past us so fast, we don't even know that it's happening. And we've all got to curate this stuff, So it's a challenge. It's a challenge for for people in the modern world. So if you want to enjoy music more fully, it's something that you have to kind of get a handle on. How do you do it? I guess I'm not really going to talk about that. I'm just going to say that that's an issue that's out there that you've got to define. And I guess I would challenge everybody that's got an iPod to figure out what's a good way to listen to the material that I have on there without listening to it at random. Personally, I find random totally unsatisfying now.
Well, I guess I would say that the best advice I could say is don't let the collecting or the collection become an end in itself. One of the debates I've been having online with a number of other people that have blogs on African music or South African music, and here I'm thinking of Matsuli and Electric Jive, for example, which are two great blogs, and you can actually go to Electric Jive and actually download some of the music. One of the debates we've been having is this idea of collectors that collect the music and then sort of hoard the music versus this idea of putting it out there somehow. And it brings up a lot of, ethical issues in terms of, copyright and what have you. But I guess the fine balance is what I think I'm sort of interested in is at least letting people know that it's out there, and then we'll get to the legal stuff later. My advice would be don't let it become an end in itself, because collecting can be a bad habit.
Yeah, I've bought a bunch of bad records just because I felt like, oh, I need to have this one by this band. Collecting is really not an end, and like Bill said, I started off doing programs on the radio. I love what you said about it being doing the show is different than just collecting it, because one of the things that I try to do is I try to make sure that what I play is something that people are going to enjoy, not just something that I'm going to enjoy. There's a lot of stuff that I know that I'm going to love, a 15-minute version of a song that I'm not going to play in the radio. Every once in a while I will play a 15-minute song because it's worth it. But I used to do a lot of themed programs on the program, and I've pretty much stopped doing that now. Now I just throw a lot of records in a box the night before, and I bring them in, and I start off with two or three that I want to play in a row, and I just take it from there because I know these records. They're, you know, I don't get out much. They're my friends. I listen to these records all the time, and I like to put them into a progression that maybe you can find similarities or differences that make them sound good together. I'm getting off track here.
You get a lot of requests.
I do get a lot of requests. Yeah.
For people that haven't heard programming, the only broadcast radio program in the U.S. And so there are people from all over the place that, because we have a streaming station on the internet, that listen from what countries?
Most of the listeners are in Europe or Colombia. There's a big market for Congolese music in Colombia. A lot of listeners are in the Netherlands, Belgium, France. I get comments written to me in French, which is where I learned to read French. It's like, oh, how do I respond to this? What was the question?
So requests are an integral part.
Requests are right.
To show for a community of people who love Congolese music and aren't in Congo.
Yeah, because I mean, there's a thing right on my blog, which is ambiancecongo.blogspot.com, and it says right up there at the top, this is your Congolese music program. And when I get requests, I want people who want to hear something that they listened to as a child, something that was in their father's house, that they would like to hear again, play that for them, because a lot of this stuff is not available to Africans anymore. And I don't know how I ended up with it. It's just because I've been seeking it out. And I get a lot of requests from people who say, oh my goodness, I have not heard this in so long, and thank you for playing it. There's a local guy here. I don't know why he's here tonight. Paul, are you here? There he is, who calls in every now and then and gives me that kind of comment. It's really quite nice.
Are there any questions from the audience? For our panelists, Ellis.
Why am I hearing your question? When I think about that movie High Fidelity, I remember trying to explain in there at all, which is this argument that has a recommendation record.
Yeah.
Did everyone hear the question? Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll start. I have different approaches for different mediums, media. Meaning, I have one approach for 33s, for 12-inch record LPs, basically, versus a different approach for 45s and 78s. And I would say that the way I organize I suppose the correct way to do it would be alphabetical by artist. I've seen some collectors do that. So you end up with an archive that, if you know the artist's name, you know where to find it. But it's sort of the way I picture it, if it was like my stamp collection, it would just be this crazy colorful picture that's very diverse. But for me, I arrange the LPs chronologically. By genre, and it's difficult to sort of. I find it difficult to albums consist of multiple genres, and various songs have different genre elements within them. So I mean, it's sort of a gray area, but I sort of have it loosely chronological by genre. So for example, if you look at my LP records, it kind of starts with just early stuff. Anything early, say prior to 1950, is just in one pile. And then after that, I have sort of a section for Kwela, and then you move on to Mbakanga, and then obviously it goes into soul and what have you. I have a different strategy though for singles and 78s, and it's I guess a more of a cataloging strategy where I actually group it by label. I just find it easier to find stuff where I know a particular label. So, for example, all the rave records are together, which is kind of odd because all the genres and the artists are then all muddled up and artists recorded on different labels. And so there could be like 100 records by one artist in the collection, and I wouldn't even know that there were 100 records by that artist just because... they're all fractured, but hopefully, and maybe that's why I'm building this website, I'll be able to find that out shortly by just typing in the artist's name, and all the records for that artist will come up, and that's actually the most fun thing. But
I'm sorry.
Other questions?
Oh. Do you want David to answer that one too?
I want to see if we get some more questions in and then come back.
Okay.
Come back. So.
That's actually a really good question. I think the thing that I've been most interested in terms of building this archive has been a lot more rarer stuff and maybe even esoteric stuff. And so I'm actually collecting anything that's just bizarre. And so to answer your question, probably the majority of the recordings are from townships, etc. But another great concern that I've had is trying to find political recordings and stuff like this. And so I've been, you know, finding stuff like speeches by, for example, Jan Smuts, who was the Prime Minister of South Africa during the Second World War. I found this great box set where he spoke before the British Parliament during the war, and he was actually quite an important figure in the founding of the United Nations and the League of Nations. And so I've been, you know, getting that sort of stuff too. So, you know, spoken word stuff, anything that's sort of weirdly political as well. One of the things that... No. I mean, the majority of the music that I have is from the townships, but I'm also very interested in sort of punk music from the 80s, from South Africa. There's not much of it, but there is some, and so I've been looking for that kind of stuff. I guess I am trying to be diverse in my selections from South Africa, but I will say this, I do have a threshold that I don't want to cross, and there's a lot of junk music if you from South Africa that I'm just not interested in. And I suppose, I guess, when I say what do I mean by junk music, well, I guess it would be like... the kind of music, like American Idol kind of music from South Africa, both black and white, and I'm not interested necessarily in that. Yes. To just continue what maybe Kendall was saying, a large part of, for example, my 78 collection is this really early Africana music, and that the Green, his master's voice over there, is one example of that. And it's basically, you know, just early folk music, Afrikaans folk music, and And it became, I guess, in the 50s and the 60s, it became sort of very light music, I guess. But the early examples of it are just great, and so that's something else that I'm very interested in. One of the other reasons why I'm trying to build this archive and make it into a website is that a lot of this information, there are just bits and pieces of information that are out there. For example, Macabre is pretty well known, etc. But there are a lot of other artists that aren't really that well known. And so I think by going back into the past and finding these old records, I'm just maybe trying to shed some light on them. And even if the music itself may not be that interesting, I think I think the context that where the music was produced makes it an interesting object and an interesting audio.
Linda.
I have no idea. Well, yeah, I mean, we have similar interests. It's like, I mean, I don't know if it goes beyond, like, I like Pekingese dogs and so do you. I really don't know how to answer that question. I know that there are people out there, like I have a really good friend in the Netherlands whose collection he inherited from his brother, who spent most of his adult life in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. He's a Dutchman. And he's when his brother passed away, he inherited this enormous collection of LPs and 45s, which he could have cared less about before his brother died. And now he's just like, since he started listening to them, he's just like, he's just so into it, he can barely contain himself. Well, that's kind of what happens, I think, with it. It's like I find a real connection when I'm listening to music from other places. A lot of Francophone music from like Benin, a lot of music that's being played by young people in Kenya and Tanzania has a lot of influence by what's being played in the Congos right now. And I hope I'm answering the question. I don't know if I am.
All right, I think I'm going to call this to a close. I'd like to thank our panelists for their passion and wisdom on the subject of collecting African music, and we'll all be around to mingle for anyone who wants to stay. Thank you, Ashley Kistler, for having us, and the Anderson Gallery, and thank you.